This is Dave Bayless for Human Scale Business. I'm speaking with Patrick Pittman, the business coach, about how to build an effective and reliable e-commerce platform. Patrick, what do you mean by the term e-commerce platform?
Well, by platform, I'm talking about a collection of features that are all necessary to enable someone to visit your website, browse, make the payment, check out, and complete that process. So you could call it your shopping cart, but it wouldn't quite be complete. So I like to call things an e-commerce platform in the way that it includes a catalog, the ability to sort and browse products by category. I like to include the shopping cart, the ability to add items to a basket and calculate totals, shipping, and then the payment collection in a secure way that runs that payment in real time through a bank and gives it approval. So that's the e-commerce platform in a nutshell. And it can also include sometimes the ability to publish articles or descriptive pages that are not just strictly catalog kind of data, but also informative. It could include sort of even your blog if it goes that far.
And why is it that you consider the e-commerce platform as such a foundational element of digital marketing and sales for manufacturers?
Well, it couldn't be really more important in terms of it's the ability to communicate directly to the retail customer in a way that comes at a distance and at incredibly low cost and the ability just to show your entire product range. So the capacity to take those orders from the retail consumer is something that, you know, for a lot of manufacturers, they deferred that to someone else to take care of. And they delivered to their wholesale buyers. But for the ability for a manufacturer to sell direct retail, the e-commerce platform is how they can do that in a way that really makes it possible for them to be based anywhere and sell to customers wherever they might be.
How do you know when your e-commerce platform is working well?
Well, I've sometimes used the analogy of it being kind of like a trusted bookshelf. And if you imagine yourself with a storefront and selling books and the shelves are all where they need to be and just sort of fade into the background. And then what you can focus on is laying in the books or turning some to have their cover facing outwards and be featured and sorting their order, getting the selection just right. So it's more just that when it becomes an impediment, when it becomes something that interrupts the browsing of the products and ultimately the payment for them, that's when it just has to become, you know, the absolute top priority. And it's, in other words, it's only a problem when it's a problem, and then it has to be brought back to its sort of having integrity as soon as possible.
Beyond this characteristic of just operating smoothly in the background, are there any other kinds of signs that you've got a well-functioning e-commerce platform? What are the characteristics of a really strong platform?
This question, you know, could be answered differently depending on whether you already have one or are seeking a new one. And so, you know, going out to evaluate what would be a good e-commerce platform kind of brings a whole host of considerations. And yet, if you already have one in place that you think is good enough, you know, you could come at it a couple different ways. But I think that, you know, you know it's working well when you have a platform that is able to show your website regardless of what kind of a device the would-be shopper is using, their small mobile phone, a tablet, or their desktop sort of laptop devices. And, you know, there are some e-commerce vendors who will offer you an upsell of a mobile version of your site. And it's almost a distinct website unto itself. You know, it's m.yourdomain.com. And that's, I think, an example of something that would be unhealthy at this point. And you want to have that design be responsive in the straightforward way for all devices. So that's one sign.
Let's take the perspective of somebody who's getting into direct-to-consumer e-commerce for the first time, and they're examining their platform options. Beyond the mobile-ready or device-independent characteristics, are there any other, you know, features and capabilities that a manufacturer should be looking for?
Sure. I think if you're just getting started, sometimes you may find that software that you already have will now offer an additional module for e-commerce. Sometimes this happens when companies have point-of-sale software that takes orders in a retail storefront, or maybe it's a So it started out as an enterprise resource planning tool or some sort of back office system for your products, and then now they have a new e-commerce module. You know, those kind of add-ons sometimes can be an attempt to reach farther than the software provider is really has the expertise to deliver on, and it has a lot of compromises that come with it. So for one, I guess I would say be wary of those kinds of solutions, and it's often not the savings or real efficiency you might hope it to be. Another characteristic is really seeing the vibrancy of the community around that e-commerce platform. You'll want to see third-party vendors or suppliers able to take the platform and implement it on your behalf. I think you'd want to not see only the shopping cart provider be able to implement it for you, but other third parties, vendors, agencies, whomever, should really be feeling like there's a capacity for them to take and implement and adapt, configure it. And you'll see that represented in online communities, forums, people describing how they solved a variety of problems using the platform. And when you can tap into that kind of a broader network, there's a whole lot of opportunities then to achieve what outcome you need for your business.
So can you give me an example of a platform provider that does have a vibrant community of third-party vendors and resellers?
Well, I think it's probably the case that a company like Shopify is among the top most on that list these days. And Shopify has a hosted solution. So they basically provide the software to you, including the hosting, which is another factor, I think, that comes into the platform discussion. They're not unique in doing that these days. It's pretty well established that the hosting is something that comes with the software. But it hasn't always been that way. And then there are many others that don't yet do that. So what Shopify offers is a hosted platform that enables you to adapt the look and the feel of the site to a great degree. But ultimately, the feature set is bounded by what Shopify offers. And you'll see evidence of a pretty vibrant community in the Shopify, Shopify environment or community.
In contrast, what are the warning signs that your e-commerce platform isn't up to snuff?
If your platform isn't up to snuff, an example of what you'll be experiencing is you'll be thinking about hosting. Just the act of thinking about it. What I mean by that is the uptime of the site, the speed with which the pages load, the security of that platform. If these are things that you're thinking about, then that's a sign that you haven't really been able to delegate that definitively, and you should. It's something that is what you could expect from an e-commerce platform that can take care of that for you and just let it become a non-issue. So an example would be there are companies who may be running on a platform like Magento, which has a long history and a lot of community support. So going back to when we talked about an example of an e-commerce platform with a real vibrant community, Magento is that. And yet the question of hosting sometimes falls back as a burden on which the manufacturer, the retailer has to make decisions and be responsible. And maybe you can then definitively delegate this to a third-party vendor who does your Magento site and definitively handles the hosting. But if not, I guess it's just an example of the sort of thing that you shouldn't have to think about anymore.
Certainly, there's an increasing array of functions that we can delegate to third-party vendors, web hosting services, integrators. But what kind of problems might you be alert for surrounding the kinds of tasks and responsibilities that you can't delegate, that have to be done by you or somebody else on your staff?
When you're looking to sort of decide how much your own team, your internal staff, or just your trusted outside consultants, whatever, is responsible for, it's going to be often in the areas of content. What's new? What's a story that you want to publish about how your product was used in a given circumstance, or someplace you just got back from a trip and need to share photos? Those are the kinds of things that you're inevitably sort of responsible for and how we want to shape the message and the wording of it. So content. And whether your e-commerce platform includes the ability to publish content, I think at this point today it really needs to, or you need to have a solution for how you make those kinds of content updates, publishing your stories. And if you have situations where there just seems like that is harder than it needs to be, or you find your staff resistant to kind of go through that process, that's a real warning sign. I can tell you an example of a company with a real tradition of publishing these kinds of stories with a large library, just a real history of taking and collecting their customers' experiences, turn them into stories, photography. It was really a part of their marketing, very much sort of a soft sell. After moving to an e-commerce platform, had a lot of capabilities for displaying products. They found that the ability to publish content was really difficult. And after going through a documentation of all the steps involved, they counted up something like 52 steps to be able to publish an article with a couple photos. And inevitably, the number of articles that they were publishing declined. It just became such an effort, a block of 4 to 6 hours that would take to move through these processes that it kind of got squeezed out of their day-to-day workflow. And it became something where it became an impact on their search engine visibility because the search engines were encouraging and sending people to this new content they were regularly publishing, and then it stopped being so regular. So after some dismay, you know, 52 steps became sort of a joke in the company. They found that what they were able to do is come back and essentially add on an entirely different content management system, a software tool just for publishing content, and then through some real sort of convoluted ways, pipe that into their e-commerce platform. And it did require some programming and some creative thinking, but it made the actual day-to-day experience so much easier, you know, from 52 to like 6 steps, and became such an easier task that it kind of got back into the flow of it again. And that was well worth the pain of getting that complex connection set up because of the nature of the e-commerce platform, just not having that ability and making it really, really hard.
These days, it seems there's lots and lots of choices when it comes to e-commerce platform or shopping cart vendors. Are there really any meaningful differences from one to the other?
My first experience with shopping carts was in 1996. And there was this perplexing problem that we had where we were developing our own shopping cart and trying to figure out how do you take someone who wants to ship a box of chocolates to all their friends at Christmas and have one checkout, one collection of payment, but ship boxes to multiple addresses all over the country. And that's a concept that's just established at this point. You know, anyone who's gone through Amazon knows how they do it. And it's pretty well taken for granted that, yes, you can ship to multiple destination addresses from one checkout. And I think that's just an example of the conventions have become so established at this point that it's probably to be expected that most e-commerce platforms are pretty much the same in their ability to go through the checkout process, to add items to the basket. And the experience, I think, is going to be pretty common. I mentioned Shopify as an example of a certainly popular e-commerce platform with a vibrant community, but there are 4 or 5 others that are, from a, you know, day-to-day standpoint, going to be able to meet your needs just as well, and yet they each have their advantages. So I can't simplify it down to saying it's all the same. It's not. The differences, though, come when we're looking at how you can really extend the platform, meaning how much can you take what's normal cases and stretch it to more of the edge cases. There are situations where companies might have a product that lends itself to kind of a configurator or a wizard sort of builder of components or some filtering of products by more than just color. These are things have to do with the attributes of products, and those are things where you really want to take some time to think through your scenarios of how you want to display the product, and then be real specific when going to the e-commerce provider and trying to get an answer. So that's something that not to overlook. And even though there's a lot of commonalities with the basics of checkout and payments and browsing, product classification, being able to really do that in diverse ways, is something to watch for.
Let's turn back to some of the comments you were making about mobile-ready e-commerce. There's been a lot of talk about the rise of mobile and how much interactions through the internet are done through a mobile device rather than a desktop screen. What does it mean functionally for an e-commerce site to be mobile-ready or mobile-friendly?
This presents a little bit of a conceptual kind of stretch for some people, because what ends up happening is your website starts to look different on different devices. And by that I mean you start to drop out some of the information on the smallest of screens. So it becomes a design process where you say, okay, best case scenario, they've got a big wide monitor and we'll show them everything. But when it comes down to sitting maybe at a restaurant with friends, pulling up their mobile phone and showing you the homepage, you know, you're not going to show that person everything you might if they're sitting at their desk at the office. And so to be responsive is to be able to say, look, this device, we know what it is. We know it's an iPhone 6 at the dinner table in a restaurant on a cellular data connection. We're going to show a few things and not all of the stuff we otherwise would. That's meaning videos, images, navigation menus. These can all be simplified and then basically respond to what's appropriate given the screen size.
So when one thinks about their e-commerce platform, is it appropriate to talk about mobile first in terms of your experience design? And then when you've got the luxury of larger screen real estate, think about how you're going to expand the information you show? Or is it still, in your experience, more appropriate to think about the unconstrained design and then go through the process of figuring out what's essential, what you can strip away and show on a smaller screen?
Anytime you start with what absolutely has to be included, what's essential, it's going to help your process. So, I mean, I like that as an intention. Often in practice, it's hard to do it that way. But we're kind of at a time where there's been a lot of talk about the rise of mobile browsing. And this led itself to a lot of e-commerce store owners or even people who build websites saying, you know, the reason why no one's checking out on their mobile phone is because your checkout is not mobile responsive. It's just so hard to check out as it is on your screen right now. And where we are today is there's a lot of mobile responsive checkouts in place. And we're still seeing a lot of resistance on shoppers to actually follow through and make the payment on their phone. It's more indicative of a behavior of browsing, checking things out. The example I used of, you know, with friends at a dinner table in a restaurant, someone might have an especially attractive handbag or watch or something in conversation comes up and you pull up the website to look to what they're talking about or where they could buy it or where they did buy it. But are you going to go through with your friends and watching, go through the checkout process right then? No, but you might come back tomorrow during your lunch break at the office and do that. I think it remains to be seen how much mobile becomes a preferred e-commerce sort of payment process. Although it's certainly getting a lot easier for us to do that on our mobile phones, there's something about human behavior and just the dexterity we have with those small screens that does, I think, still make desktop just as important as ever. And yet, the need for a mobile site to be responsive is very much there. And it's also driven by things like Google giving a real preference to sites that it perceives as mobile responsive. And so it's wanting the best experience for its Google users on the mobile phones. And so you see, you know, it's not just the shopper you're trying to accommodate, it's like the gorilla Google. And so these are things that make it a real priority. And yet it has to be viewed with, you know, it's not the most significant thing you could ever do with your website is make it mobile responsive. It just becomes almost a sort of fades into sort of the must-haves you almost take for granted rather than something that really distinguishes it.
What I'm hearing you say is that even when it comes down to something as operational, functional as e-commerce platform, that we still need to be thinking first and foremost about the behaviors of our customers and what they want. And to the extent that they're using different devices to interact in different ways at different time, we need to be ready for that and make sure that we're providing them with a good experience, whether they're just checking out our site and checking out our products or whether they're checking out. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. And I guess it's also the case that we want to be thinking about what's really the most important thing that we could focus on. I want to say it's something else besides mobile. I also want to say it's something else besides collecting an email address. But I have a hard time skipping over that in a conversation like this because I think collecting someone's email address does become one of the most important things that you can do and give attention to in your e-commerce platform. So they might be at a restaurant with friends and have a prompt to enter an email address. That might take a moment. And then when they come back the next day, or if they forget to come back when they're at the office the next day, you've got that hook, that ability to kind of reach out and touch them again with an email. When people are moving across multiple devices, their mobiles and desktops and laptops, Google is doing its darndest to track them and to enable you to track them, to know where they came from and what they've done. But it's just a really hard thing to hang on to. If you can get their email address, that becomes the best thing that you could do when they visit your site. But I want to say something else about it, because at this point in time, you're either doing that sort of, or doing it, you know, in a mediocre way, or you've heard that before, and so it can kind of, you kind of not give it as much attention as it really merits. So what I would say, where I think is, you know, the most significant change you could make, it has to do with video. The capacity for a shopper to really overcome that really deep-seated doubt or suspicion about something they can't touch and smell and taste and hold, that's not right there in front of them but presented virtually, is able to be overcome with video in ways that are so much more powerful, I think, than any other part of the shopping experience. The video has that quality to show it in context, to show it in relation to the human body. We're just measuring extraordinary differences in the shopping cart conversion rates for those who watch a video. When your conversion rates of visitors to buyers reaches a certain point, you can afford to pay for more visitors to your site and have a return on that investment in a very short period of time, to the point that you can just keep sort of buying traffic, and having it pay for itself as you acquire new customers. What video enables is it boosts that confidence of the buyer, making your conversion rate go up, making all kinds of other things for building traffic financially possible. So the most significant change you could make is to go back through your product pages and layer in videos that might be appropriate to really helping them understand how to choose and buy the product.